The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. From national security to global corruption, you're with Scott Wheeler and Through the Looking Glass on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Through the Looking Glass. I'm Scott Wheeler, broadcasting on TNT Radio. And we have some breaking news at the moment. Former President Trump says he'll be arrested on Tuesday as the Manhattan District Attorney eyes charges. Former President Donald Trump expects to be arrested Tuesday in a case brought by the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, Reuters is reporting, and called on his supporters to protest in a Truth Social post he made on Saturday. He says, quote, this is quoting Trump from Truth Social, illegal leaks from a corrupt and highly political Manhattan District Attorney's Office, which has allowed records to be set in violent crime, whose leader is funded by George Soros, indicate that with no crime being committed or being able to be proven, and based on an old and fully debunked fairy tale, the far and away leading Republican candidate and former president of the United States of America will be arrested on Tuesday of next week, Trump wrote, unquote. Protests take our nation back, Trump said. A spokesperson for the district attorney's office declined to comment to Reuters. The New York Times reported on Saturday the timing of Tuesday's arrest was speculation and might not come as soon as then because of one more witness needing to testify to the grand jury, which would delay the indictment. There's been no notification other than illegal leaks from the Justice Department and the DA's office to NBC and other fake news carriers, Trump said, that the George Soros-funded radical left Democrat prosecutor in Manhattan has decided to take his witch hunt to the next level, unquote. A Trump spokesman told NBC News on Saturday morning after Trump's Truth Social post, President Trump is rightfully highlighting his innocence and the weaponization of our injustice system. Quote, he will be in Texas next weekend for a giant rally, Make America Great Again, unquote. Reaction included shock, including anti-Trump Twitter CEO Elon Musk, who said he will be backing Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in the 2024 presidential election cycle. Quote, if this happens, Trump will be reelected in a landslide victory, unquote. Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg's office earlier this year began presenting evidence to a grand jury investigating the payment by Michael Cohen, Trump's former personal attorney, made to a adult actress, Stormy Daniels, whose real name is Stephanie Clifford, said she had an affair with Trump a decade earlier, and Trump has denied the affair all along. The payment they're claiming is the reason the payment is criminal is because it was hidden from his books, and it may have been used. He may have subverted the payment and violated campaign finance laws in 2016 as a result. So this is a shocking development that in all the accusations made against Trump, and I never like being in a position of defending Trump, but in all of the accusations made against him, this is what they get, what they're ending up with. It's kind of an admission that all of their other fury and brimstone was all made up, it would seem. To help us unpack this, let me welcome Bill McIntosh to Through the Looking Glass. He's host of Quorum Radio on Denver's AM 560. He's also the publisher of The Dirty, Locked Away History of the Democrat Party and of Convicted While Innocent, My Testimony. He's also manager of Ocasia Media and is an expatriate of America living in Peru since 2009. Mr. McIntosh, welcome to Through the Looking Glass.
Hey, Scott, it's great to be on there. Call me Bill. And I just want to say that I saw a very, very funny meme, but tragically, a very, very on point meme to what's going on now. Sargas Angari is going to be on at 12:20 Eastern time. You know, mentioned this this apparent news that Trump is going to be arrested on Tuesday. But the meme says, it's a picture of John F. Kennedy, in which, if you don't already have one, go out and get yourself a conspiracy theorist friend. You're going to need one to understand what's about to happen. It's just perfect. I mean, this is like heaven sent for the news that's about to come out. And by the way, I mean, I don't have a problem defending Donald Trump. He's not perfect. He's not my savior and my Lord. He's somebody who is an obviously very imperfect man, but a man trying to who's been trying to bring this country, put it back on the right track. I mean, to think, Scott, that in 70 years, for the first time, America became, under Donald Trump, a hydrocarbon exporter is unbelievable. But that's just one thing. They have been trying to destroy this man and his political aspirations to the presidency since before he got elected. And, you know, I think, what does a man on the street say? The man on the street says that, oh, yeah, we knew Hillary Clinton was supposed to be elected, not Donald Trump. Everybody thought that the idea that Donald Trump would be elected was just a farce. This was a joke, you know. But no, he did get elected because people, you know, in the mainstream media, the elites are out of touch with the people that have to pay taxes and have to, you know, survive problems in the economy and job losses and, you know, rising interest rates and sick children and all the things that happen when, you know, you don't have $10 million in the bank or more. And we think basically that the ordinary people basically think that, you know, Hillary was running a massive influence peddling operation. That's what my gut tells me, because, you know, after Donald Trump was elected and Hillary Clinton was not elected, donations to the Clinton Foundation collapsed. Why? Everybody knows. Because it was like pay for play. You know, you wanted to speak to the Secretary of State or somebody, you know, in her office. Maybe he had some sort of an issue to resolve. What happened? People would pay money first. The Clinton Foundation, and then everything will work out great, right? And now we see something similar with go ahead.
We're speaking with Bill McIntosh, who is the publisher of the Dirty Locked Away History of the Democrat Party. And it seems appropriate in this situation. The reason I don't like to defend Trump is because I think he gives his enemies plenty of ammunition, and he doesn't attack them back in a very smart way. He does it very sloppily and in a foolish way. And I've said this before on this broadcast, but I'll reiterate it here. I wrote the very dynamic response to anything the Democrats could have accused him of in 2016, in October of 2016, in the definitive explanation of the Russia collusion story, just as it reared its ugly head. And instead of embracing that strategy, he chose to call it a witch hunt. He actually acted guilty, even though he wasn't. And so it's hard for me to gin up sympathy for him, because he is very difficult to defend in that sense. He could have gone on the attack. He could have pointed out that for 8 years, Obama bootlicked Putin, essentially. He could have showed the videotape. He could have shown everything that Obama did to accommodate Putin and Russia. And instead, he just went around and said, oh, it's a witch hunt, it's a hoax, it's a whatever. Well, that isn't a good pushback against an attack of that sort. He could have done what I did, and that is bring up the video of Adam Schiff, one of his antagonists in the House of Representatives, who accused him of treason and accused anybody who defended him of treason, and pointed to videotape that I found of Adam Schiff on Russia Today talking about, in 2014, talking about how he intended to weaken the FISA court weaken the FISA court in an attempt to cozy up to the Russians. And yet he didn't do this. So when I say I don't like defending Trump, it's because he doesn't defend himself very well. I can present the facts, and it's up to him to actually use his platform and the bully pulpit when he was president to point all these things out, and he never did. And so that was a great disappointment to me. He could have pointed out the Democrat. No, and nobody has said this. You and I know this is true, Bill. We've known each other a long time. But the fact of the matter is the Democrat Party is the most corrupt institution in the history of Western civilization. And here they're accusing a guy of even if he's guilty of it, some slight political campaign violation. This is the party that took tens of millions of dollars from communist China in the 1990s. And there was no Democrat Party apparatchiks arrested for that. Party members arrested. And so this is the kind of thing that why I call the Republicans a stupid party, because they refuse to tell that while Democrats are lying about Republicans, Republicans won't even tell the truth about Democrats.
Oh, sure.
I'll let you respond, Mr. McIntosh. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. No, there's a lot to say, but here's the thing, Scott. I think this is the worst government that money can buy. And that's what we have. George Soros gets involved with district attorney races and the prosecution of justice or injustice. And every day that goes by, I live in Peru. Every day that goes by, America appears more and more like a third world country. Okay, where you don't have a proper administration of justice. You don't have a sense of balance and a sense of caution. Merrick Garland. I mean, who is he fooling when he says that I have to administer things in the Justice Department with fairness and with impartiality? Nobody believes that. What happened with the Mar-a-Lago raid was something that basically, if they wanted documents, or they could have had a meeting while Trump was there. They could have resolved it in an amicable way, in a respectful way, and not in an indelicate, violent, a clownish way that looks more like something out of a third world country, or like, what you expect in Putin's Russia, right? So, but I think that, Trump, he's obviously not a perfect man. He shoots himself in the foot often, but still, that's not enough justification for anybody to want to put him behind bars and arrest him. There's just not, they've been trying. I mean, when this thing came out in Mar-a-Lago, it was supposedly because of secrets and nuclear codes and national security issues, dire issues, and that just disappeared. That story went away. They use these claims, these canards, to create headlines, and they know the public is going to forget. It's like Richard Nixon once said, they accuse you, it comes out on page one, and then when you're exonerated, it's on page 36 next to the deodorant ads. Okay, people have a very short memory.
If you're a Republican, yes. If you're a Democrat, the accusations are rarely published, and when they are, they're couched in a series of explanations of how it can't be true, and the accusers are flawed, and the accusers are partisan, and that's the problem we have with 85% of our media in this country being corrupt Democrat Party apparatchiks. Not liberal, as they like to pretend. They're not liberal. They're Democrat Party hacks. And that's so many people are misinformed. Yeah. Well, Stalinists are.
I mean, they just cannot stomach the idea of people that actually love this country pushing back on people that want to sell this country down the river. I mean, Hillary Clinton, I think hell hath no anger like a woman spurned, right? And that's Hillary Clinton. And I think my gut tells me, I think she's somebody who has something to do with this. That's what my gut tells me. Okay.
I don't think it's her necessarily, because there's really what she doesn't have to. The Democrats are using Trump as a foil for everything. And they're even pretending to be the Biden and the Democrats are pretending to be anti-Russia and anti-Putin, despite their decades-long lickspittle relationship with Putin. They are pulling this off, pretending like they're helping to defend Ukraine and Russia. Putin's a bad guy and Trump's close to Putin, none of which was true. Including,
projection.
And we actually know this from the Mueller report, where it said from reliable Russian sources that on election day, when Trump won, Putin gathered a meeting of his closest advisors and said, "Do we know anybody who knows this person?" That's how distant and so far fetched from reality the Democrats' claims were, and they knew they were false. And that's the problem with this whole argument, is they knew this was a manufactured lie, and they pretended to believe the lie, and their media allies pretended to believe the lie, and pretend like this was something that could have, you know, Trump-Russia collusion was something that could have happened. So
why?
Anyway,
no, they have no integrity. That's why. Dirty lack
no integrity.
The Democrat Party. And remember, folks, I know I have to go and get to live on Sargas soon, but the dirty lack of history of the Democrat Party. Check it out, guys. It'll tell you so much about the party, the alleged party of the little guy, which is really just a 200-year stream of crooks, thugs, bigots, and subversive traitors.
So well said in such a short period of time. Thanks so much, Mr. McIntosh, for being a guest on the Through the Looking Glass. We're going to take a short time out. When we come back, we're going to bring in U.S. Army Colonel Sargas Sangari. He's the CEO of the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement. Also very well informed with multiple combat tours and with assigned to special forces units in the United States Army. We'll take a short time out. We'll be right back with more on Through the Looking Glass.
TNT Radio's Ross Cameron.
Australia has taken a decision in the military sphere which Australians may struggle to comprehend the significance of the step change that this decision involves. I thought I should go back just a few years to 2014. The Abbott government will select a Japanese-built Soroya-class submarine. So that's 2014. Then on April 26, 2016, French company DCNS will build Australia's $50 billion new Barracuda submarine fleet in Adelaide. So then we have round three of this extraordinary, magnificent step change in submarines, which came on the 16th of September 2021, when we learned that it was not the Japanese, not the French, but Australia is embarking on its most significant change of defence and strategic direction in decades. Prime Minister Scott Morrison said a new alliance had been formed with the UK and the US that was the most significant security development for Australia since the ANZUS Treaty. Interesting that ScoMo flipped on a dime from the commitment which we forced the French to comply with, that the submarines must not be nuclear powered.
Ross Cameron on TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Plug in.
Website.
TNTradio.live.
Check it out.
Today's news talk radio.
It's the coolest.
TNT.
Welcome back to Through the Looking Glass. I'm Scott Wheeler, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. We opened the broadcast today with the news that Trump announced that he believed he'd be indicted next week. And now to talk about that, plus other things, there was an arrest warrant issued by the United Nations this week for Vladimir Putin. We're going to ask our next interview about that as well. It should be interesting. U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Sargas Singari is CEO of the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement and the host of the program New Paradigms Show. He was born and raised in Iran. While serving in the U.S. Army, Colonel Sargas had 6 years of continuous combat deployment in the Mideast, conducted 144 combat patrols, 22 special forces missions, and survived seven IED attacks. During his time in the Army, he held a diplomatic post as U.S. Director of Host Nation Affairs in Kuwait. Colonel Sargas Singari has a deep skill set in Mideast languages and cultures, and he understands the plight of Assyrian and other Christians in the Mideast. Welcome, Colonel Singari. We appreciate you taking the time to join us on Through the Looking Glass on TNT Radio.
No, it's good to be here. Much appreciated.
Mr. McIntosh said that you would have something to say on this Trump indictment. So before we get into international affairs, let me ask you, what is your opinion? What's your initial reaction to this?
Well, I guess it's like everybody else. If you look at the case itself, the three individuals involved would be, of course, the previous POTUS, President Trump. You're looking at Marco Avenatti, the lawyer for Stormy Daniels, or the lawyer at that time working for him, and then Stormy Daniels, the porn star. So the way the case has laid out is where Stormy Daniels has said that she had an affair, of course, with Trump, and then Trump used a lawyer to pay her off. Now, really, if you want to look at it outside of an a race or election, he says in this case, President Trump, that he hadn't had an affair with her, and he did, pay off to make sure that basically everything was settled outside of a possible court proceedings. And those things happen. People can settle civilly if they want to. There's nothing as far as a crime for someone paying an individual to basically have something that would end up in courts to not be in courts. That always happens. So that in itself is not a crime. It is done at a personal level many times throughout the entire United States. In this particular case, though, when you have Mr. Braggs, who's bringing the court case, supposedly trying to reach and say that, well, it was done in the context of a race. Now, I ran for office, and frankly, it's not a violation of any type of a law if you even have to settle these type of civil issues personally. So I'm not sure what he's trying to reach at. I think he's trying to paint the picture that it was only done because Trump didn't want to have it to be seen as part of the election process. It might somehow be a violation of election laws. I don't know how this is going to go forward, to be honest, given the fact that Michael Avenatti himself has been convicted and he's lied in the past. So he would be the key witness to this entire case. It is more likely and possible that it could be thrown out. But given some of the reactions we've seen from courts, depending on who's sitting on the bench, there's no guarantee how this whole thing will go. I do know that there's been now, as far as Trump is concerned, he's laid out on Truth Social that there might be a possible arrest against him come this Tuesday. But at the end of the day, if you really just kind of look at the case, you have to prove some kind of a violation in him having a lawyer, basically his lawyer writing a check and basically paying off an individual just to get him out of their hair, even it might be, as he says, not even true that it happened. And that does happen a lot of times throughout our entire country. It's unfortunate because all this is also happening in context of what just happened with the International Criminal Court going after Putin specifically. Given the
let me get to that. Current, we're speaking with the retired Army Colonel Sargas Sangari, and we are. This is from the Epoch Times this morning, Saturday morning. That is, Russian President Vladimir Putin has been formally accused by the International Criminal Court of war crimes and faces an arrest warrant, which the Kremlin considers illegitimate. ICC President Pyotr Hovmansky said in a video statement Friday that an arrest warrant has been issued for Putin for the, quote, alleged war crimes of deportation of children from Ukrainian-occupied territories into the Russian Federation, unquote. International law prohibits occupying powers from transferring civilians from occupied areas to other territories. Hovmansky said the contents of the warrants would be kept secret to protect the identities of the allegedly abducted children. Quote, nevertheless, the judges of the chamber dealing with this case decided to make the existence of the warrants public in the interest of justice and to prevent the commission of future crimes, he said. Now, what Colonel Sangari, do you make of that this announcement by the ICC, and is it worth anything, and does it have any real teeth? What will they do next?
Well, everything has to be enforced, right? If you can't enforce it, doesn't have any teeth. You could put anything on a piece of paper. How are you going to follow through the whole process? You know, according to the UNHCR, you have approximately 100 million people that have been forcibly displaced worldwide. That's almost 1% of the global population. Now, as a matter of that, as you mentioned in your opening, that I've dealt with the issues of the Syrian Christians, how they have become refugees displaced, and what the definition of that is. You would have to go into court and say that there was something in writing that Putin, in this case, had actually written and given the orders that you have to take the orphans, bring him into Russia, and then we are going to put them in adoption for Russian citizens only. I understand the process that the International Criminal Court is going through, but enforcing it and then having somebody be taken back to The Hague and put on trial for that, it's something completely different. And that may never, ever happen. Regardless of what the possible indictment has been. Now, can The Hague, without Putin even being in court somewhere at The Hague, go through a trial process against them? I've seen even crazier things happen when it comes to the court proceedings, but how are you going to enforce it is really at the end of the day, and I don't think currently, as it stands, the Russian people are, as of today, at least, turning over Vladimir Putin to face charges at The Hague.
So the actually, his popularity in Russia is fairly high at this point, partly because the Democrats have turned him into a pariah here, and therefore increases his popularity at home in Russia. But what would it take in order to bring Putin to UN justice, to the ICC, they would have to actually remove him from Moscow and transport him to The Hague in Brussels. If they cannot do that, then their paper, the issuance of this war crimes accusation is basically worthless, right?
Well, not just that. You have to, the defendant gets a chance to defend themselves, whether it be named Trump or Putin or Biden's son or Biden, anybody. At the end of the day, you have to you have a right and legal counsel to defend yourself. Look, you have maybe an estimate of 36 million individuals that might be in a displaced status. You take a look at that. You're looking at almost less than just maybe in the 40 percentiles. That could be children that are 18 years of age or younger. It's very difficult given, you know, you have individuals are even born in refugee camps and throughout the entire Middle East. There's no precedence where you could go back and say that, you know, over the past 40 years, four decades that we have done anything as far as convicting individuals for these type of displacements that have taken place or for which are really forced migrations of individuals, pushing them out of their existing areas of living. If you want to go back to the first genocide of the 20th century that was conducted by the Ottoman Empire against the Armenians, the Assyrian Christians, and the Greek Pontus Greeks, there's been never a settlement that has been through the court processes that has even addressed these issues. And no one who was in those particular leadership positions has ever been brought to The Hague and actually put through a trial process. So you have to find precedence, right? So if this happens, unless I'm missing something that a smart lawyer out there has looked at a case study on, it's probably more difficult to get anything done with this particular case against Vladimir Putin.
Well, let me ask you this, Colonel Sangari. Are the accusations valid, A, and B, if they're not valid, is this some kind of political operation that the UN has undertaken, and will it undermine their credibility in future accusations of war criminality?
Well, we do know that there's Ukrainian children that are currently orphans who have lost parents that are in Russia. Now, it's a matter of how they see themselves within that status or how others see them. There was if I may, just a little bit longer of an example, but there was when the war in Ukraine began civilians were being targeted. There's a famous video out there, and I use that as an example to even teach my kids, where a father and a son are in a vehicle. The vehicle is engaged, in this case, a Ukrainian father. The vehicle stops. The first rounds go past the vehicle and along the road. The second set of rounds come through the vehicle and basically splitting between the father and the son who are sitting in the driver in the passenger seat. The father tells his son to get out. The son is able to bail out on into basically a little ditch area along the road. The father is now, the third set of rounds go through the vehicle, wound the father. The son comes around and he has a camera in his hand and he's videotaping what's happening, and sees that his father is dying on the road, finally pulls the father out. And then, of course, the father in the long term bleeds out and dies. Now, that example was shown on multiple U.S. media. And in those U.S. medias, basically everybody who was a possible Russian unit that engaged that vehicle was convicted in the eyes of the media outlets. But from a military perspective, and your heart goes out to the fact that you have civilians being killed on the battlefield. It is nothing different than what you may have done in Iraq or other operations, where if you see a vehicle on the side of the road and you're a military unit and you see individuals in those vehicles, and keep in mind at that time, as Zelensky had said, everybody should marshal and fight against the Russians. The first set of rounds are a warning shot that go past the vehicle. Second set of rounds go through the vehicle, and then suddenly doors open up. if you're a soldier on the other side, you don't know what's coming out. It might be an individual with an RPG. It might be an individual with small arms, and he might be engaging you. So then the next set of rounds are engaging the vehicle. When the target has been knocked out, in this case, the father was bleeding out on the road, there was no more engagement on the vehicle. So now you have to bring these two sides together. The Ukrainians say you're killing civilians, and the Russians, if there's a unit gun comes into The Hague and sitting there, can easily say, well, these are our SOPs. When the vehicle was no longer moving, we thought it was a threat, we disengaged. We did not kill the son. And the
process, let me push back against that a little bit. Colonel Singari, let me push back against that just a little bit. In Operation Iraqi Freedom, the reason vehicles had to be at times dispatched with the ammunition were because frequently they would be loaded with explosives intended to kill soldiers at checkpoints. And so there was a necessity to control vehicles that way. In Ukraine, it was somewhat different because these were people fleeing their homes that were being bombed, and to engage targets of that nature, I understand. I actually truly do understand the difference in recognizing a threat, but there seemed to be no rules. There were no rules of engagement for the Russians. They hit everything that they basically wanted to, anything that was in front of them, and there were no vehicle-borne IEDs blowing up the Russian soldiers. There was, combat.
I am not defending the Russian unit in this case. I'm using it as an example because
I understand. You made a good example. Your point is well taken and very well, very technically deliberative. My point was that when you use the cases in Iraq and Iraqi Freedom, there were far different circumstances, I think. And so rather than leave people with the wrong impression, in Iraq, we had to shoot at vehicles because there were frequently a risk to not only to American soldiers who are at checkpoints, but also to civilians who are working in those areas as well. And so, I understand you weren't defending Putin, but also I wanted to make an argument for our old branch of the services, the U.S. Army. We're speaking we're speaking with retired Colonel Sargas Singari. We're going to take a short time out. When we come back, there's been new developments in China's relationship with Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, a nation that President Trump had gone a long way in developing good relations, including when he moved the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. He was able to keep the Saudis from bolting from being a loyal partner to the United States because of the way that he called them. And so we want to talk about this new relationship between the Saudis and the Chinese. And I believe Colonel Singari will be able to provide some excellent insights on that. We'll take a short time out. We'll be back with more on TNT Radio's Through the Looking Glass. I'm Scott Wheeler.
The World Health Organization is pushing its pandemic treaty, global instant lockdowns. This must be stopped.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
The World Health Organization is once again pushing what the Washington Post called the Radical Pandemic Health Treaty. This must be stopped. The entire public health bureaucracy has now reinvented itself as a Marxist socialist pushing entity that must be brought under wraps. A pandemic treaty would give Bill Gates-funded scientists at the World Health Organization the ability to declare a pandemic and then see global lockdowns, global stay-at-home orders, global mask mandates, global vaccine passports. Bring back scientific debate, national sovereignty, and end the tyranny of the World Health Organization. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
when the forgotten poor are suffering and in need of healing. They wait for a ship unlike any other. Mercy Ships, the largest floating civilian hospital in the world, with volunteer medical staff and crew who donate their time to save lives. Heroes of mercy, like these.
Every human being has the right to be treated as human, to have a place at the table of the human race.
If you could just see the look in the patient's eyes or the smiles that you get when lives have been changed, then it would make it all worth it.
We bring hope and healing to one person, but that person belongs to a family, and that family belongs to a community.
Together, these heroes of mercy and friends like you bring hope and healing to those who desperately need it.
Thank you!
Thank you!
To learn more about Heroes of Mercy, go to mercyships.org today.
Investigating and reporting on government corruption and overreach, national security, national and international issues. You're listening to Scott Wheeler and Through the Looking Glass on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Through the Looking Glass. I'm Scott Wheeler, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. We're speaking with retired Army Colonel Sarjit Sangari. He is the CEO of the Near East Center for Strategic Engagement, and a global expert on military affairs. And going into the break, I referred to a meeting between China's President Xi Jinping with the King Salman bin Abdulaziz of Saudi Arabia. There's been a new alliance in this relationship between Saudi Arabia and China. China has been very active in Africa, the Middle East, and also in the Balkans and Eastern Europe. What are your concerns in this regard, Colonel Sangari?
Well, you know, a couple of years ago, when we realized that U.S. footprint was being marginalized in the region, and it was done basically because the current administration really wanted to leave the Middle East. The difference between the current administration and the previous administration is that even Obama wanted to leave the Middle East. Trump wanted to leave the Middle East, but Obama was looking at more pivoting and looking at South America. In the case of President Trump, he wanted to leave Middle East, but pivot and start countering China's expansion. Well, the current POTUS, President Biden, the folks that were in the Obama administration, a large number of them are still advisory capacity in the current administration. There's an article I had written in 2015 after I come back from a briefing on the in a terrorism conference in Japan, that it was called the New Power Relations. Wang Yi had given a speech at the Brookings Institute where he had basically laid out China's vision for the entire globe, to include what the U.S. should do in order to ensure that China and U.S. do not become adversaries. Under the Obama administration, when Susan Rice took to stage at George Washington University, she didn't talk about how to counter China's vision for the globe, but she basically talked about how we can actualize Wang Yi's vision. And since then, if you've seen everything that has happened, to include the most updated article I wrote just going back a year ago on why the current European conflict is taking place, is pretty much a reset of that map, moving the chess pieces in the right position. Where in the case of what was briefed by Wang Yi to the Obama administration, where we are today, was a U.S. withdrawal into the U.S. borders itself, taking care of what they believe would be internal issues, where either Russia or, in this case, the European Union, possibly controlling Europe, and then all the nations of the world, the big polities, whether it be Russia or the EU's, whoever is remaining strong afterwards, to include China and the U.S. competing over resources in Africa. Unfortunately, when the United States pulled out of that disastrous pull-off from Afghanistan, We knew from my company perspective that it seems that the map of the Near East would be redrawn. How is the map of the Near East would be redrawn to counter the Chinese Communist Party expansion? It would be where Israel would take the lead with the Abraham Accord countries, and possibly with India being part of that particular unified stance to be able to counter China. China sitting down with Saudi Arabia is to counter the successes of the Abraham Accord countries, especially given the fact that even Sudan itself, which is really a pathway to where Chinese ammunitions were coming in, and when the explosion took place in the port in Lebanon, we saw there was a lot of Chinese designed weapon systems, include fuel for rockets that had come through the Somali Northern Africa route into Sudan, back through the Sinai, and made itself somehow into the hands of the operators that are were trying to operate missiles against Israel, working with the Hezbollah. That was a sudden approach. So Sudan on February 26th now becomes part of the full Abraham Accords, and how China counters it, it ensures that it starts digging into Saudi Arabia, which is one of the most key members of this Abraham Accord status, trying to tie it to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which China is in the lead on, and Iran, Russia are all signatorials to. This is a major fight by China trying to not just control the Middle East region as it does through proxies, even in northern Iraq. Mandarin Chinese being taught to the Kurdish, our American so-called allies, in order to be able to allow China to expand its footprint. Just 2 days ago in the town of Karakush, which is under a Christian town, you have Iranians flexing their influence through their surrogates, Shia surrogates, and the Hashishabi militia, to be able to counter and be able to make permanent settlements of Shias in that particular town, to allow the Shia Crescent to be able to expand from northern Iraq through Kurdish areas into Syria, into Lebanon. It is China's way of using its ties with these countries that need its dollars, U.S. dollars, unfortunately, that China holds, to be able to expand China's footprint into these regions in order for it to be able to counter Israel, which right now has taken more of the lead in the Near East region to try to buffer against an expansion of the SCO.
We're speaking with retired Army Colonel Sargas Zangari. And Colonel Zangari, you mentioned weapons that were being that were heading for Sudan from China were ending up in the hands of Hezbollah fighters who were attacking, using them to attack Israel. Do you think that was China's intent, that they would end up with the global terrorist group Hezbollah, or do you think that it was just a byproduct of being reckless in who you sell weapons to?
No, China will expand. China conducts ethnical cleansing to be able to get to where it needs to be. Years ago, I had done a regional assessment when I was in Thailand on the Burma issue and what was happening in the Arcon region. I was recently interviewed. I'm a member of the International Press Association on the issues of Africa. And what China is trying to do in Africa. China is trying to control a region economically. Once it controls it, then it utilizes ethnical cleansing to cleanse out people internally, to keep them down, what we call the red colonialism, in order to be able to expand its footprint with its conglomerates, control areas that U.S. may not even get into. In the case of Burma, what it did, it pushed its conglomerate support with the Burmese military, which when I wrote a paper to the National Security Council a year to the date of submitting that paper, a coup took place. And that particular coup that took place replaced a government that was tied to at least more Western-looking U.S., now under a junta, that is basically in the pockets of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. The genocide that took place in the Arakan region was simply a wanton desire for China using the military control to be able to push those individuals out of the way to build its conglomerate and its Belt and Road Initiative through that region to be able to basically import anything from the Middle East and pipeline it, especially oil, directly into China mainland and counter our control on the U.S. side of the shipping lanes in order to be able to, once if it decides to finally go into Taiwan and Taiwan is captured, and we don't know if the U.S. will ever even be involved in a war, we may not decide to even fight China over Taiwan. Now, the entire island chains would be open for its control. That means Asia would fall basically in its own hands. So China will give weapons and equipment to whoever it can to basically cleanse out individuals. When you have a Chinese Communist Party that is harvesting organs out of live individuals, the Falun Gong, and is actually conducting genocides internally against people inside of China, things that are much worse than what Putin has now been convicted for by the International Criminal Court. International Criminal Court has not convicted anyone in the Chinese Communist Party for the harassers and the killing and the genocide that it conducts constantly internally inside of China mainland. China will use those capabilities to be able to achieve what it wants to achieve at the global level. And if it means that it has to fund terrorist organizations, unfortunately using U.S. dollars that it gets and launders into it through projects that it does and ties that it has with the United States companies at the geostrategic level, then so be it. It will do that.
So as China, as communist China digs into the Middle East, and in fact, CNN reported recently with, quote, with grandiose diplomatic flourish, China has brokered a rapprochement between Saudi Arabia and Iran in the process of upending U.S. calculus in the Gulf and beyond. So China is digging into the Middle East, becoming the broker between countries there, and putting itself in a position to have a lot of influence over the oil, as you pointed out. If they're buying Middle East oil, as the United States caps its own wells and cripples itself from its ability to produce oil and fuel, and converting the energy economy to this so-called green, whatever precisely that means, the use of exotic materials to produce energy, such as lanthanides and rare earth minerals, while we're also the same people, the Democrat Party is also capping our wells, limiting our energy production, also limiting the mines that produce the critical parts that produce their alternative energies, forcing us to buy them from China. We're allowing China to control our own sources of this new energy production, while also controlling, dominating, putting itself in a position to have control over the old energy production systems. Is this putting the United States in a terribly vulnerable position, in your estimation, Colonel Sangari?
Well, it's put us in a position where we have to negotiate, right? Because we're not in the leverage position. The recent trip that the SECDEF took to Iraq and then following into Syria and to Israel, the most indications are it wasn't talking about the possible strike against Iran, but possibly how we can ease the sanctions on Iran selling his oil. And Iran selling his oil with the easing of sanctions would mean that China would benefit, because China is reliant on Iranian oil. Keep in mind, I mean, you can't just, it's hard enough to feed billions of people three meals a day, let alone try to provide them what they need on the energy side to keep them sustained. I was recently, you know, we give advice, I could talk about this to various different companies. And one of the companies that I give advice to ended up recently looking at a possible contract with China, one of the largest Chinese companies out there that moves oil. And when they asked me about, well, you know, is it right for us to work with a company that, you know, is trying to purchase oil for China? I said, the same company that you're debating if you should do oil business with or not is actually having its ships dock in the United States. And the current POTUS is taking the strategic reserve of the United States, putting it on those ships and being shipped to China. So if you don't want to do it, your president is doing it and the current administration is doing it. So we're taking our own oil and we're giving it to the Chinese who may be in war with us sometime over the next year.
Let me break in here, Colonel Sangari. We're wrapping up here. Thank you so much for your service, sir. And thank you for joining us on Through the Looking Glass. From Washington, D.C., I'm Scott Wheeler signing off.